Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining us on the Content Callout again. It's Amanda and
Kayla. Hello, everyone.
So today we have an awesome guest. It's Mike Morrison. He's the founder of Bloggity Inc. and he writes his own blog and he's a social influencer in Alberta. And he started blogging back in 2005 and then he's involved like literally into every channel and he runs digital marketing conferences, including a great one called Social at Home, which is his pivot from Social West. So looking forward to talking to him today and we hope you guys enjoy. Hi, Mike Morrison. Welcome to the Content Callout.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Thank you for joining us.
Here.
We're everywhere now,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Okay. So yeah. So I'm Amanda. This is Kayla. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for asking me. I love doing these.
Awesome. So we are just going to jump straight in this. Let's start with your journey as an entrepreneur. So tell us how you decide to start your own business and go your own way.
So I guess I've technically been an entrepreneur for 7 years, which is crazy. And the last job I had was I was a producer of Breakfast Television. And my whole career, basically since graduating university, has just been very random because, first of all, I have a degree in Spanish from a university in New Brunswick, so that makes no sense. And then I got a teaching degree and I hated teaching and I have so much respect for teachers because I hated every second of it. I don't know how people do it. And then like I moved to Calgary from New Brunswick and, you know, I worked at a bank, I worked at restaurants. And then I started a blog called Mike's Bloggity Blog Blob. It was called Mike's Bloggity Blog Blob then. And it was just for fun. Like there was no intentions of making money because back in 2005, there was no concept that you could make money from it. So it was just for fun. And I loved writing. I always loved writing. And it really, honestly, looking back, feels like it just snowballed to these incredible opportunities, culminating in me getting to be a TV producer at Breakfast Television for 4 years with zero experience, besides, you know, learning how to create content and stuff like that. And then I was able to sort of make enough money from the blog, mostly through like influencer marketing and things like that, that eventually I just sort of made that leap in 2013. And I was sort of at this point where I was like, I'm going to leave my job when I know when I'm making the same amount as I'm making at Breakfast Television. And I sort of had this realization one day, like as long as I'm working 40 hours at Breakfast Television, I'm never going to be able to make the money I needed to make from the blog. And so it was sort of this leap of faith where I just sort of jumped out and gave it a go. And it's been going really well since then, but it hasn't always been how I make money changes basically every month. It's constantly evolving and things like that. And that's definitely been hard and exciting to get used to.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you brought up the blog, actually, because I wanted to ask you about that. You're one of the first bloggers, I guess, I knew in my home city that seemed to be making a go of it. How do you feel about the term local celebrity?
I mean, so I grew up on pop culture. I absolutely love it. And I was just talking to a friend about this yesterday, because I would say pretty much every day someone says hi to me. And that's so cool to me. But it's also this sort of thing where we just naturally put people they recognize in the media as like celebrities or local celebrities or things like that. So little kid in me from Fredericton can't believe people know my name and think that's really, really cool. And then it also makes you sort of say like, well, what makes you go, like, what is a celebrity and what is all that? But I would say as well known as I am now, that's just like as well known as I'd want to be. Like, you know, when you see way bigger celebrities or way bigger online personalities, like people posting photos of them, things like that, like that's maybe happened like once or twice. But like, I like people saying hi. It also helps me in a way because I always joke that I'm an introvert trapped in an extrovert's career. So my career dictates that I'd be, hi, how are you? But like this, I'd rather do this than the three of us sit and have coffee at a coffee shop, if I'm being honest. And so it helps if you know who I am to help me start the conversation. I don't want to talk about me, but I also don't want to explain what I do. So it's like, oh, you know who I am. Okay, tell me about you. So I like having sort of a foot in the door that way.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't take it too seriously, maybe is another answer. Like it's very fun and it's very exciting, but it's also very fleeting and silly.
But I also think that's key that you don't take it seriously, because you do see the people who are online and you can tell they take it just a little bit too seriously, right? Especially at a local level. And it's like, it kind of sounds from what you said about your story, your journey, is it happened really organically for you too, right? Like you started the blog just for fun. Like there was never any intention. Like I feel like a lot of the more like local influencers, local celebrities, like they start out and that is their purpose. Whereas you kind of like rolled into it a little bit.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I always say I'm very lucky that I started when I did, because my intentions were different. Like there was no concept of me ever making money, where I think anyone, whether they want to or not, you start something and it, some part of you hopes that it makes money someday, whether it's a podcast, an Instagram channel, things like that. So your motivation is different, where I think I just got into a habit of doing what I was doing. And now I'm lucky enough to make money from it. So like I can still, even when I do travel stories, and that's sort of a lot of the work I do these days is sort of helping travel industry rebound a bit. And I always talk about hotel rates, how much the rooms are and things like that. And like, that's something most influencers sort of don't do because they sort of want to project this different lifestyle, where I'm like, well, no, like people are going to ask me how much the rooms are. They want to know how much a lake view versus a mountain view is and things like that. Cause that's what I did before. So I don't have any sort of pretenses of sort of projecting this personality that's not mine, because I've been lucky enough to make a living from just being myself.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
Now you said 2005. So obviously that means you've been doing this a long time, 15 years, right? Oh. So is it possible for someone to start now and get to where you are, or is it saturated?
That's a super good question. It's a lot harder, I think, if I'm being honest. So when I started 2005, so that was before Twitter and Facebook and any of those things. And like, I think Perez Hilton was probably what people thought of as a blogger. And so then as the blog started getting attention in Calgary, it was just because media outlets were looking for bloggers. Mine was called Mike's Blog. I also have, like, again, I grew up in pop culture, so I knew what an interview looked like. I knew how to carry myself in front of camera. Like that stuff didn't, I was a theater kid, so that stuff. So being able to sort of write a blog and also be okay being on radio and TV helped a lot, I think. But then there just weren't very many of us. So it stuck out. I stuck out way easier than I think you would now. I think if you launch now, I would say to focus like on a micro audience. So there, now it's called micro influencers. And so I would find something you're really passionate about and just focus on that and build that audience. Because say it's veganism, and if you have 1,000 followers on Instagram or whatever, your podcast, that are interested in veganism, you're way more influential than someone like me who's sort of a bit more general. Like I sort of cover so many different topics that I often put stuff out there and it only hits certain audience members at a time. And so depending on the brand or who has the money, that might be of interest, it might not. So if it's like a McDonald's contract, everyone sort of knows McDonald's. But if it's a vegan product or a gluten-free product, my audience is sort of way more diluted than a micro audience. So it's possible, but it's just not the same trajectory for sure.
Very smart. And okay, so you are obviously called a Calgary influencer. And when you started...
Yes. But I just want everyone to know I don't call myself that.
Okay, so let's talk about the term. You hate the term?
Yeah, I guess... since blogging started, I've always hated the terms because they're always used as dismiss. So like journalists dismiss bloggers and influencers, like it's an industry. But I tell people, like if anyone walks in saying they're influencer, they don't have influence. Like that's, you have to like really think about what influencer is. Like it's someone who has influence. So you can't just walk around saying you have influence. The audience decides if you have influence. And the company, if the company hears about you, they've decided you have influence and things like that. I guess the term is content creator, but most people say influencer. But I always just say like, I'm always like, it's weird when you say you yourself are humble, because then maybe that's not being humble, but I'm always like, I really don't like introduce myself as an influencer. Like when I'm working, sometimes like I was just in Waterton working with a hotel chain and the front desk doesn't know who I am, and that's fine. But then there's always that awkward conversation about like why you're there and like things like that. And so you have to be like, I'm doing an influencer campaign. Not that I'm an influencer.
Yeah. You got to do the humble brag, but
yeah,
like, trying to,
yeah, explain it to people. But like humbly, like I'm actually humbly bragging. I think sort of joking though, like I think growing up, well, like the last 15 years of basically putting my opinions out there and then hearing people's opinions about my opinions has like made me super sensitive to like trying to be like, I know that what I do is stupid. Like I, you know what I mean? Like, and I also know in some terms it's effective and sometimes it's really interesting and fun and stuff like that. But like, I by no means think I'm changing the world and that the world is better because I'm talking about a hotel or something like that.
But let's talk about this for a second, because you became an influencer without ever striving to be an influencer. Yeah. It didn't even happen or it didn't even exist when you started. Now, what about people that start out with the goal to become an influencer?
Yeah, I think they just have to, they have to think about why they're really doing it. Like there's months that I don't make money from it and I'm still writing posts and I'm still doing stuff and I'm still like, I still have to make a living. So I have the events and I'm sure we'll talk about that, but it's, I like putting content out there. I like telling people that Waterton is seeing that people booked a trip there because of it. Like that stuff sort of fills my tank. I would do that whether I'm being paid or not. Advice I would give influencers, people who want to be influencers, is again, be that micro, find your niche and sort of hone in on it, but also like, don't just talk about companies that you're getting paid for. I can't, like every day my feed is filled with companies that small businesses, whatever, that I want to talk about because that's what my content is. But also that helps when you do get influencer campaigns, because I think my audience is like, oh, well, like I liked all of other Mike's posts about companies. I'll probably like this one too. And it's sort of also, I think sort of owning who you are a bit. So like, I think all red wine tastes the same. I think, you know, like, I love McDonald's unabashedly. I also know, like, I'm not a beautiful person and I don't dress really nicely. And things like, I literally signed into this podcast and was wearing something horrible and realized it was video. I'm sure. Like, I think it's, again, because I started with different motivations that I'm totally comfortable being myself and not having to pretend that I love the fanciest foods and that I look super fashionable and that like that I have a ton of money when I don't, things like that. Like there's an event a few months ago for a wine event, and it was a wine dinner at Banff Gondola, and they ended up sitting me beside Sarah Triggs of like Jackson Triggs. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and I didn't know who she was. And I was like, who are you? She's like, Sarah Triggs. And I was like, oh, like Jackson Triggs. I was like, I can't sit here. And she's like, why? I was like, cause I just bought a box of wine for my hotel room. Like I don't deserve to sit beside you. So we switched.
Hey man, they sell boxed wine.
No, I know. But like there was all these food writers and wine writers who would probably kill for a chance to sit beside her and talk about wine. And I was going to be like, yeah, grapes, right? Like what, you know? So we switched seats because I wanted someone else to have that opportunity. And then afterwards, she was like, oh, why'd you switch seats? And I was like, I want to talk to you about business. I want to talk to you about, like, because she had started her own winery. I was like, I find all that interesting, but like, I'm not a wine person. And so like owning that kind of thing is, it's hard because you turn on your Instagram and you see these people sort of portraying themselves as a certain way. And some are just doing it for fun. And others, I think it's sort of mirroring what they see kind of thing. But I do wish that sometimes they saw what I did and was like, oh, I'm just going to be very normal. And like Mike is making a living at it and kind of things. I wish there was more people like me. And that's another thing I say, like when I talk about those posts, like there's more middle-class people like me who have a little bit of money to spend on a vacation here and there, or only want to spend $75 on a pair of jeans max. Kind of, like there's more people like me than there are the people who are portraying this sort of five-star VIP lifestyle. So in terms of thinking of myself as a business, which I have to do sometimes, to me, it makes more business sense to appeal to a wider group of people in terms of customers or things like that, because I'm like them. I never want to portray that my life is different or better than anybody else's. It's just, I have the microphone, so you hear from me more, I guess.
So let's talk then about like the brands and the causes that you do choose to work with, because like you said, you are unabashedly you, and I'm going to go back to something you said. You are very handsome and you do look nice.
Oh, thank you.
No, I'm serious. You could have worn the hoodie and you would have looked great, but you choose a variety of causes and a variety of things to talk about that I think I would say that some of the influencers or micro influencers don't nowadays, because they're quote unquote taboo. Like, you'll touch on politics, you'll touch on pride, gay rights, you'll touch on a variety of different subjects. So how do you choose, I guess, what you're going to do that affects, quote unquote, your brand, and then what you're comfortable with and how far you'll go with your audience?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, it was a bit of an accident in a way. Like, I grew up in New Brunswick, where everyone just votes for the other party every 4 years. Like, it doesn't really matter what the other party does. Like,
they're it's just automatic.
Yeah, and they're like, oh yeah, you, I guess. We're here. It feels here in Alberta, it's a bit fundamentally different. So it took me a few years to sort of realize that upon moving here. And then there was stuff when I came out, and I really sort of got interested in protecting the laws and the rights of LGBTQ youth, because they don't get to vote. They often have terrible situations at home. And so I sort of felt, responsibility is maybe a strong word. I just sort of was like, well, why not? And it's sort of, that has snowballed as well in terms of my activism and talking about the government, things like that. But I definitely take motivation from like A-list Hollywood celebrities who are doing it. And yes, they have less to lose, but everyone, if you have a microphone, whether it's to 20 people or 20,000 or 20 million, you do have a responsibility, I think. As a gay white guy, I often say I'm sort of on top of the pyramid in terms of LGBTQ privilege. You know, everyone wants their gay best friend and things like that. So I have that responsibility. And it has come at a cost, I guess. Like, there's definitely brands that want to work with safer people. I've definitely lost things. But I also like work with TELUS has sponsored me for 3 years, like during every election and everything. And there's other companies too, McDonald's and Pursuit, I do a lot of travel stories with, and they sort of appreciate that because they know that my audience is sort of on board. Like, they, my audience sees me go through the ups and downs. And if they know that I'm real, then when I talk about something else, they're going to believe that even more, kind of thing. It's going to be more authentic. And again, like, if I didn't talk about that stuff, I would just be like everybody else, is like another way of thinking about it. So just talking about my day-to-day life. And there are other things that I don't talk about. I was thinking about that today. Like, I was like, there's other things going on in my life that is just for my friends and family and personal conversations and stuff like that. But this sort of personality, I guess, I'm putting out there cares about these things and cares about LGBTQ rights. And I think when I first started talking about it here in Alberta, it was sort of tricky because there were a lot of LGBTQ people who wanted to say things, but they all had jobs and they were nervous about their jobs and nervous about those types of things. But I was already self-employed by the time I was really getting into it. So I wasn't scared of anything beyond losing a few contracts here and there. But I know it's what you tell kids, but like, if a company doesn't want to work with me because I'm fighting for LGBTQ rights, then like, I don't want to work with them, kind of thing. And so it's been a journey. And I think if you're thinking in terms of fans and followers and audience, they want to know about you. They want to know about the things you care about. Maybe you can teach them some things, maybe you can't. And there's a balance sometimes, you know, and it's also knowing when to pick a fight and when to like, is there anything you can do right now? Or sometimes it's more beneficial to help raise money for something than sitting on social media and tagging politicians or things like that. So it's a roller coaster for sure.
So how do you know when to pick a fight?
I don't. I'm learning. I think it's just sort of that gut feeling, or if you see someone saying something that's just blatantly untrue, like it's just, no, that's not. Like, we're coming up to Pride here in Calgary and I'm like already prepping for the photo. Like, we're not doing the parade this year, so maybe it'll be different. But like, they always post photos of like the crudest photo they can find that looks like a parade and be like, this is a sex parade, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, well, God, like that sort of stuff. But also I think in social media now, after years of sort of doing it, you really have to know who you're picking a fight with. If someone is like, no, screw you, you're wrong, the first thing I do is look at their Twitter feed. And if they are, every post sort of opposes my general thoughts, there's nothing I can do to change their mind. So it's just a waste of time either way. And I also think because I have a bigger audience, they probably get really excited if I write them back. So like even engaging with me is a highlight for them kind of thing. And so, but I see as more and more, I think as Donald Trump won and other politicians here in Canada and things like that, I see people wanting to get more involved, but then I see them fighting with like anonymous accounts and people who are just like, you're never going to change their minds. And so mm-hmm. I'm always like, I like DM them. I'm like, let it go. Like, not worth it. Like, they're trying to waste your time. They're trying to distract you. They're trying to, and not that it, maybe it's not that orchestrated, but if you're talking to someone who's so ideologically different than you, you're wasting your time where you could actually meet someone who's not sure or who could learn some more information, like spend your time doing those types of things. Over the last little while, I find myself more like retweeting people as opposed to me trying to be the lightning rod, because that's, activism is always interesting because people like get sick of you really quickly. So for me, for years, I was definitely probably the most vocal LGBTQ activist in Alberta. But as the issues sort of evolved, we're talking about more trans rights and people of color issues and two-spirited issues. Like, there was times 5-6 years ago, I was getting asked about those questions and I was like trying to answer them. But then I was like, wait, I should not be answering these questions. They're not my lived experience at all. And so I think part of what I'm trying to do is empower other people to do it, to speak up. And so when the media calls me, I'm like, hey, talk to this person about this, talk to this person about that. So as opposed to just being that thing, but people want to hear what you think. And like, if you're scared of saying that you support LGBTQ rights, or you're scared to say Black Lives Matter, like, that's a question you need to really look at yourself a bit and wonder why you think that would hurt your business.
So in terms of giving other people a platform and lifting other people up, I want to talk about Social West.
Oh, yeah.
And I would say that that is that in mm-hmm. a sense. So can you tell us about how you started that and how that
came
about? Yeah,
so Social West started, this was going to be year 5, and obviously it's canceled this year and we'll come back next year, hopefully. But it was a digital marketing conference that I started 5 years ago and started really small. And it's just sort of grown. So now last year's was 850 people from across the country came to Calgary. And then, so we started expanding it. I did this was going to be year 3 in Halifax. And then we were about to do our first one in Ottawa. That is about lifting people up in many regards. We're purposely in cities that people don't think about as digital marketing. My sort of message has always been like, as long as you have a great internet, you can be really successful anywhere now. That's the great, and this sort of pandemic has sort of proved that even more. It really doesn't matter where you live. It might help with connections every now and then, but if we're all trapped in our homes for the next year and a bit, anyway, like, it's all about online connections. And so seeing these events grow in different places has been really exciting. And because those audiences are really starved for really great content as well. And so we bring Google, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Microsoft, Adobe. We bring all these big speakers to these cities that are normally not getting access to these kinds of events. And then I sort of put my touch on it in terms of every speaker gets paid. I think it's probably the cheapest conference, 2-day conference in Canada for the content you get. The max ticket is $600, which for small businesses is very hard. Individuals is very hard for sure. But for that professional development, most conferences are $2,000, $3,000. And so we try to make it as accessible as possible. And then when the pandemic happened and we had to cancel, obviously refunding everyone would be devastating for the company. I think a lot of people maybe didn't realize that ticket sales, that money's being spent before the actual event. So paying your employees and contracts and things like that. And so to have to refund that would be very hard. So we pivoted very quickly and created Social at Home, which at first was webinars. We did like the second week of the lockdown, we did a free webinar and we had like 800 people show up for like social media in a crisis. And then that sort of evolved into this online conference. And we did it in June and we had 500 people come. It was a 1-day conference and we had people from every province and one territory. And we're doing it again in October. And I think my sort of mentality behind the conference is like, I wasn't a conference person. And it's sort of really kind of like the social media accounts. Like, if you ask me, like, who are my favorite bloggers, I'm like, I really think work on mine.
You're like me?
But, like, I don't really go to conferences that much. And so, to me, as it turned into a conference, I sort of was just doing what I thought a conference would be. And so, and when people are like, oh, this is so cheap, And I'm like, well, why is that conference $2,000 and not paying their speakers? I'm like, what are they doing with that money kind of thing? So like I can make a living off doing that and paying everyone and making sure as accessible as possible for everyone. So Social at Home is really sort of the next evolution of that, because now we can be in everybody's home. So even if I was in unconventional cities, but it was still inaccessible to so many people, travel's expensive, hotel's expensive, things like that. And now I can bring a conference right to your door, literally, because we send everyone this box with content in it that helps them navigate the conference. And so we'll be like, hey, it's hour three. Make sure now it's time to open envelope one, and there'll be stuff in it. And so everyone sort of joins in the virtual lobby, and we put like sidewalk chalk in the box. And so go outside and write a message to healthcare workers and tweet a photo, and you'll be entered to win a contest and things like that. We were able to keep people engaged throughout the whole conference. And I really like it. Like I miss the online events, but I see the potential. Sorry, I miss the in-person events, but I see the potential of the online events and like how it can grow and how we can reach people in Newfoundland and Nunavut and Vancouver Island now in ways that we weren't able to before.
Well, yeah, because I think if we're being typical, you go to Vancouver, you go to Toronto, those are the key hubs. And if you don't live in one of those key hubs, you're either spending the money to go, and so you don't get to experience or go to these cities that normally, like you said, don't necessarily have these kinds of conferences. So let's just talk for a second, though. Like, you worked on a very quick timeline then from what you're saying, because second week of lockdown, you're doing something. Like, I mean, I think, yeah, you know, I speak personally, but second week of lockdown, I was like, should I make some banana bread or should I sleep and cry some more? And here you're like, yeah, you got new conferences, you got packages, you're like, you're steamrolling ahead.
So like, I was the crying last week. Like, I haven't like not done those things. So business-wise, we almost immediately started getting emails from our attendees being like, what's happening? I want a refund, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hang tight, something's happening. And I was like, I don't know what's happening yet, but like, hang tight. And I would be like, I'm not saying no to a refund. I'm just saying, can you like give me a little bit to like see if I can offer you something that you'll be happy with kind of thing. So keeping in the business mind, like I sort of had to dig myself out, because I was like, this is a time everyone's at home. And so we just did a seminar that was simply based called like social media in a crisis. I had three social media experts talk about what brands should be doing that week with their social media channels, what they should be saying, what they shouldn't be saying. So it was like something that was like, so I had like crisis comms people. So it was stuff they sort of knew. I mean, not necessarily to deal with the pandemic, but they had good and bad examples kind of thing. So business-wise, it was great because we got 800 new emails and we sort of kept our audiences saying like, hey, we're going to stick around. And we did one like 2 weeks later. And then after that, I launched a 4-week webinar series that was 2 webinars a week. It was sort of like the gym, not that I go to the gym, but like once I got in the routine of it, like looking back, I was like, it didn't feel that hard because I was just, and now that I sort of took the summer off and I'm planning the October event, it's really hard to get back into. Like, I'm having a hard time, but like, it was sort of survival mode. But then also mental health, it gave me something to do. And like, I'm someone that was busy, like personally and professionally, from the minute I got up to the minute I went to bed. And I felt like I'd lost everything. So no events, no influencer marketing. I'd laid off my employee, I closed my office. I was one of those worst case scenarios for sure. And I think the hardest part for me was, and I think so many people went through this, was like, I didn't do anything wrong and I still lost everything. Like, that was really heartbreaking for me. And like, I talked online a lot about mourning. It felt, in the times I've lost people, friends and family, those feelings were very similar. Because one day I could convince myself it was going to be okay. And the next day it was like, it's over. I'm calling my parents, like things like that. We're moving home.
Folding up shop.
Yeah. So back putting the business hat on, I'm really glad that we did it, because we were able to, and I'm saying we, and it's just me. I don't know why I keep saying we. My boyfriend helped a lot, but it helped us set a precedent really quickly. So we were able to scramble and sort of be the one that people were looking at already. And then I started getting hired to like help run other online events and help run other webinars. And like, I had literally never attended a webinar before I hosted one for 800 people. Like, that was my first webinar. But it helped, because to me, I just did what I thought a webinar should look like. It should be short. It should be like to the point. It should look nice. Like, we should, like, so even for conferences, when we did Social at Home, we had each of our speakers sign in, and there was 35 speakers, I think. We had each of them sign in 15 minutes early, and we like looked at their display. We're like, no, lift your screen, turn the light on. Like, we made it because that's the stuff that's going to make you stay up, stand out from other online conferences that aren't paying attention to those details kind of thing. We're really small, so it's me and like my boyfriend helps a lot. And I hire two or three people that work in the same sphere as I do. But because it's so small, I think we're able to work really quickly. And everyone knows the things I care about and the things I don't. So I care about like the audio visual quality. I care about the content. I make sure that people aren't bored. You know, so even the conferences were like 20, 25 minute sessions. And some people are like, oh, I wish the sessions were longer. And I was like, if every session was 45 minutes, you would not have stuck around 8 hours like you did. Like, you stuck around because they were fast. And that helps your speakers sort of get to the point kind of thing. So I think having my TV producing background, and it all sort of has culminated into sort of what it is right now.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm at a loss right now. A little bit.
No, I'm like, just thinking, like, you're an army of one. Like, and the amount that you produce, like, obviously, like you said, your partner, your boyfriend helps you out a lot.
Yeah.
A couple of contractors. But I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think 2019 was your first time having a full-time employee.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. So yeah. I hired Emma, and she's the best. And it was so hard. We just couldn't make it work in terms of COVID and things like that. But she's landed on her feet. Landed on her feet nicely.
And but you are an army of one, and you went ahead and still did this. Because I think,
yeah,
for some small businesses, like you said, you didn't do anything wrong. But COVID has obviously impacted you to the point where you can no longer do what you normally do. And so it's the battle. It's, do you fold shop? Do you continue as one? Do you go and look for outside employment?
Like, do you call your mom and dad?
Yeah.
Well, I
move into the basement.
I talked about it on Twitter. Like, I definitely called my parents at one point because it was very different. So my parents, they're retired now, but my whole family, all my siblings, everyone has worked for a government. And so for years, I've been the fun one. I don't have vacation days. It looks like I'm always on vacation. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not, but like, it looked like I don't have 9 to 5. I was doing all these things. And then all of a sudden it was just switched where they like were comfortable. They're all working from home, still making their salary, still their benefits, still everything. And I had nothing. Like, I called my nephew and I was like, you're paying for your own Spotify. I can't do this anymore. Like, I was like,
you call your siblings. You're like, I'm hijacking your Netflix this month.
Yeah. I was like, no more family Netflix, like get your own accounts. Like, this is ridiculous. But I think there's something about the way I come up with decisions. So like, I think I take a long time to make a decision, but once I make it, I live with it. And sometimes I'll say the example of like, because it's happened, like I was in Spain once and I got my phone pickpocketed and I was like, oh shit. Oh shoot, can I swear? Anyway.
Yeah, you can swear. You're good. No, you can swear. You're good.
Okay. I was like, oh no. Anyway, and I just kept dancing and my friends were like, Lauren, what are you going to do? I was like, what can I do? I was like, I literally can't do anything. It's gone. I'm never going to find it. I'll deal with the ramifications of not having a cell phone in Spain tomorrow. But like, and that's sort of this thing. I was like, there's nothing I could have done to put on an event this year. So to sit there and spitballing about an in-person event, I wouldn't say I got over it really quickly, but I came to the conclusion that I couldn't do it very quickly. So my sort of philosophy, what I was trying to put on out on LinkedIn and stuff like that, was like, try something. Like, we can't just sit on our couches and mourn what we lost, because we all lost it in a way that was good and too. So every small business I know was all of a sudden put in the exact same position. We were all put on the same playing field. And as small businesses, one of the things I'd sort of been struggling with over the last few years was I was having a hard time not being able to talk about those months that weren't financially good or those events that didn't work or things like that. Because as a small business, you're sort of expected to always project success. Mm-hmm. Because the second you project failure or faltering, people are going to move on to the next thing, is what I was nervous about, worried about. So I was telling a friend that he actually started this little group of like entrepreneurs in Calgary where we just like could vent and we could say like, hey, like my ticket sales are really slow. I don't know what I'm supposed to do kind of thing or whatever. And there's all these different types of businesses. That's been really helpful. But when this COVID happened, you didn't have to pretend to be successful anymore because no one was. Everyone lost everything. So it sort of was nice to talk about it frankly and honestly. And I remember, so the two webinars were free. And then we switched the sort of the 4-week webinars. And I put on my personal Facebook and I said, hey, like, I've never asked for help. I've never asked for a GoFundMe or Patreon or anything like that. I was like, but if you feel like helping me right now, here's this 8-week webinar that's $25. And I said, if 100 of you buy it, I can pay our speakers. And I was like, and if 200 of you buy it, I can pay myself something this month. And I think, honestly, I think we sold like 500. But like, I think it was okay to put out my friends and my family, like most who don't care about what I do, do not think I'm a local celebrity, as you call, like anything like that, which is great. But like saying, hey, I need help right now. I need money right now. That was something that small businesses aren't used to doing. But I saw a lot of them do it and it's fine. Like, and even I was telling some of them, you don't have to do something for charity right now. Like, and I know that's a hard thing, but like you can launch a new product and it doesn't have to go 20% to a school or something that you normally do. Like, you are the charity right now. Like, do what you need to do to keep your businesses afloat. Because if you have to close your business, then you won't be able to help that charity that you wanted to next year anyway.
No, I actually really appreciate that vulnerability that you have and that everyone else has. I think when you're looking at someone who is a content creator, a lot of the time, all you do see is the highlight reels. And we were talking about this with a different content creator yesterday.
No, who are you talking to?
And even she was saying that it's actually important to show both sides of that sometimes, because otherwise people do get the wrong idea and think that you don't have problems and issues and it's always sunny and you're always on vacation, like you said. So yeah. I think people actually really do connect with that. Have you gotten any like messages thanking you for that vulnerability or reaching out to you?
I think so. I mean, it's all a blur, honestly. Like I even I looked at my Instagram for that, like those really cold first 2 months. And I was like, oh my God, it's so miserable. Like I was just miserable. And I try, like, definitely that balance of Instagram or like any social media projecting something. So like, I think for me, it's like, I don't want to make your day worse or necessarily better. Like, I just want it to be a part of your day. So like talking about you having a cold or something like that, like you're not going to see that on my feed, or like, I don't want you to feel bad for me during the middle of your day. You're like on your lunch break scrolling Instagram and I'm all of a sudden like, my life is over. You're like, oh, enjoying this cob salad. But also just sort of being realistic and saying, I don't know. I really like the travel stuff because it allows me to sort of be really comfortable in what kind of travel I like doing. And like the other day I was hiking and I like, this is real. Like I forgot bear spray and I was by myself. So like I bought a hot coffee and I was hiked with a hot coffee and I was like, this will like buy me like 30 seconds. And then someone was like, what about on the way down? And I was like, oh yeah, good point. But you know, but that's like sort of just a normal thing for me to do. That's fun. That's like, I don't know, like just interesting.
Well, Mike, this was wonderful. Thank you so much for your insights of small business and influencer. Like, this was wonderful. Thank you.
Oh, this was so fun. I love that you guys are doing this. This is really good for anyone to sort of just get different perspectives. And any small business, that's whether if they're starting out or they're going, like, I would say don't spin your wheels too much. Like, use podcasts like this to sort of keep wind in your sails, but like start something, try something now. Because if you think about it too long, you might not ever do it. Or if you start it, you might not even like doing it. So you're like, don't waste a year thinking about it. I mean, like, oh, wait, that's why when I used to teach a blogging class, I used to be like, start now. Like, you might actually not like blogging and write 5 posts and be like, oh, wait, I don't want to do this every 5 days a week or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. You never know, right?
Yep.
So, Mike, where can everyone find you? Obviously, we've talked about the blog, but the name has changed since you launched.
So yeah.
It's Mike's Bloggity Blog.
It's Mike's Bloggity Blog. And it's pretty quiet right now. It is. As I was trying to save my other parts of my business, but yes. I have so many things I want to write about. So I'm hoping to give myself that opportunity soon. My next event, Social at Home, is socialathome.ca.
Perfect. Excellent. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. This was so great. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Have a great day, Mike.
Wow, that was a really great discussion. Thank you everyone for being with us today and listening to Mike Morrison. Amanda, for me, I have a couple takeaways. I just absolutely love that guy. That was so great when he said, just keep dancing, and talking about his phone getting pickpocketed in Spain. It's such a great metaphor that I totally agree with. And then the other thing that really struck with me is when he said, just do it now. And that's a lesson that I think we all need to take. Just do it now.
Yeah, just try. Like, that was such a key point when he was talking about how he pivoted his huge conference, Social West, into Social at Home, and how he tried these new webinars, because like you said, he'd literally never done a webinar, but he was like, if I don't try it, I won't know. Because I think sometimes as marketers, we get stuck in, we want this to be perfect. We want this to be the best thing ever. And then, which leads us into like paralysis, then we don't end up doing it. So I love that point from Mike, where he said, you just got to do it. You just got to try it, because you'll never know.
We want to thank all the listeners for being with us today and being part of this conversation. And you know what, guys, please give us a like, give us a share, support us.
Subscribe and give us a rating on Apple or Spotify or wherever you're listening. We'd really appreciate it.
We want all the things.
All the things. Have a great day, guys.